Welcome back to Copper Country Today. We are heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 and FM 99.3 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102, our program brought to you by the members of the Copper Country Education Association. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. I again thank Nancy Warren from the National Wolf Watcher Coalition for being my guest in the first segment of the program. And in the second half, we turn our attention to electricity, that expensive stuff that we all need and seems to be in short supply around here sometimes. Melissa Davis and Sam Lockwood are here from the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition. This week, they added their organization's voice to those who are calling for changes in the way electricity is provided here to the Western Upper Peninsula. So, Melissa and Sam, thank you both for coming in. Explain to me what the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition is.
Well, the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition is a group of entrepreneurs and developers that are interested in emerging renewables to local market here in the UP. And I happen to be the president, and I'm the managing director of another nonprofit where I don't represent a developer and entrepreneur. We focus on educating people about renewables. So,
yeah, that is New Power.
New Power Tour.
Yeah. So you're involved with that. And Sam, how did you get into this?
I'm a retired physician and moved back to the area in 2008. My family's originally from Hancock and goes way back, and wanted a different quality of life from what we were experiencing in Austin, Texas. So we came back home to the area and kind of fell backwards into renewables. Ended up with two wind turbines on my two properties in the area, and that was how I first got involved and found out just how rich a mix of renewables that we have in the Upper Peninsula.
This program, actually the idea that I first had for it and then was prompted by the statement that your organization released this week, it kind of dates back to a conversation I had with Scott Dianda on the show a few weeks ago when he said that this isn't something that if he's reelected in November, he wants to start agitating more actively for in Lansing. And that is, and it's a two-pronged problem. First of all, UPCO customers, at least in this area, pay among the highest electrical rates in the Midwest, maybe even in the country. Secondly, our power is coming from further and further away and from sources that are fewer and fewer. So let's talk a little bit about how we address this. First of all, in terms of the reliability of our power, because bottom line is, if we don't have reliable power, it doesn't matter how much you're paying for it or not paying for it, as the case might be. So talk to me about the need for reliable power.
I'll take that one. I think the reason that we allow regulated monopolies in the United States is so that in a case like this where you've got a commodity like electrons, you want to have 24/7 reliability. And so our coalition is taking a look at these numbers right now. We are sold that we pay 25 cents per kilowatt hour because that's what it takes to provide the Upper Peninsula's 15 counties with reliable power. It's coal-fired power. It's nuclear power that comes from out of state. So we're enriching with an out-of-state service model. Now, is it reliable? And earlier we were chatting, and we all have stories about when the power went down. If you have two large transmission lines that bring the bulk of power to this area, and those lines go out close to the Wisconsin border, then the entire western UP goes dark.
Yeah, and that was the case 3 years or so ago when we had a situation where one of those high-tension lines was down for repair. Lightning struck the other, and the entire western Upper Peninsula went dark for, I think it was probably about 10 or 12 hours. And it really kind of pointed out how fragile our power supply is here in an era when there ought to be no question about that.
Well, you know, when you have a microgrid, that's something that can be turned off and on and turned into an island when that sort of situation happens, and it can be connected back to the grid when the grid needs extra power.
Now, explain what a microgrid is.
I have a definition right in front of me by the DOE that'll be perfect.
Cool, we like that.
It's DOE calls a group of interconnected loads and distributed energy resources with clearly defined electrical boundaries that act as a single controllable entity with respect to the grid. A microgrid can connect and disconnect from the grid to enable it to operate in both grid-connected or island mode. So in that case, when that power outage came and your radio station was able to stay open, you're a little island.
Yeah, we had our little microgrid here that ran basically from the generator in the back room to here, and it kept us on the air. Everything now in the grid is so interconnected. I mean, we've seen this, the big East Coast power failure a few years ago, caused by a branch that came...
Hurricane Sandy, right? No, this was caused by a branch that came down
in Cleveland. And one by one by one by one,
domino effect,
all of the emergency shutoff things came into play, and everybody was shut down because of a problem with a branch in suburban Cleveland, Ohio. You know, millions of people out of power. Have we become too dependent on this whole big interconnected grid?
Yes. You know, and we have the opportunity to start to create islands that can support the grid when needed and work just fine, you know, when not.
The argument we hear from the utilities is that adding renewables to the mix creates grid instability. It's patently false. The German model, and there's plenty of data to support it, they lead the world pretty much in renewable implementation, and adding renewables to their grid structure has improved the reliability of the grid. And if properly implemented, that's what we expect to see.
Right.
Yeah, and that was going to be one of the questions that I had noted here is, I mean, I remember this area when I was coming up here as a kid. We basically had what you are talking about now. There were lots of little power plants. The Lawrence Worden plant was operating. The White Pine plant was operating. There were little hydroelectric plants here and there. There, you know, all of these dams that we have now across the central and western Upper Peninsula, all were attached to active power plants at that point. We had that system. Why did we abandon it?
It's that historical legacy. If you look from 68 forward, a lot of things happened when the mines closed, and one of the things is that there was a lot of attrition in almost all areas of industry up here. And so we just got to a point where with the outflux of our people to other places, the loss of population, loss of jobs and things like that, we ended up losing some of those smaller entities. And now we rely almost completely. There's 10% choice, and we have a hydro plant in the eastern UP. But now we have an outsourced electricity generation, transmission, distribution model.
And we have one power plant that's still online, sort of, in Marquette, the Presque Isle plant. And it's an old fossil fuel burning plant, and it's been in trouble because it lost its major customer already. And so it was in financial trouble, and now the EPA has come out with this long list of regulations that it's going to have to meet. It's going to cost more than the plant is worth to bring it up to speed. So what little power generation we had left here in the central and western Upper Peninsula, that's going to disappear too.
In our open letter to the governor over the last 2 weeks, you've hit a key point. Average electricity costs in our 15 counties is about 25 cents. There's some scary things that are going to happen over the next 2 years unless changes are made. They're going to drive us towards 40 cents. The reallocation of the cost to keep PIPP open, $52 million, is going to be allocated to Michigan customers.
Yeah, realistically, we can't expect anybody else necessarily to pay for it. It is our power plant. It is our power. And I guess I can understand to some extent why our power costs here are higher than they are in some other areas. We have a very low customer to mile of line ratio here. I can understand it. You know, and our weather is severe at times, and the power companies up here don't have the luxury of having what some of the power companies have downstate, a lot of underground protected power lines that are protected during storms and such. Mm-hmm. We get a big wind up here, we can have a lot of line damage, and it's expensive to maintain all of that. So I can understand to some extent why our power rates are higher, but and I guess what I really want to move toward here is how do we fix all of this? We're not going to be able to solve that problem. We're still going to have one customer per mile, two customers per mile, things like that. We're not going to be able to solve that problem.
I think we can address it, though, if we start to build microgrids that make it so that you don't have to transmit it as far, so that the transmission lines are what's so expensive. So if you start to have islands that can serve local areas, then you don't have to make it as the lines be used as much, and especially not as much as I'm transmitting it from Green Bay.
But
which is the second solution to the Presque Isle power plant issue.
The soundbite I would use is produce it here with our incredible mix of renewables and consume it here.
But the flip side of that is, and I'm talking with Melissa Davis and Sam Lockwood from the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition, we are doing some production of power here in the Western Upper Peninsula using biosources.
Are you talking about Launce Warden?
Yeah, Launce Warden is producing fuel using wood products. They're also doing some of that, or at least trying to do some of that. I'm not quite sure where White Pine is in the mix on that right now, but certainly Launce Warden is bio-fed. But even given the amount of fuel that we can provide for it, and at very little cost because it's generally byproduct from something else, it costs more money to produce electricity at Launce Warden than it does to import it from Wisconsin. So if it's going to cost more money to do it that way, how do we save money doing it that way?
Well, we would challenge that point. UPCO will tell you that they can buy power all week long at 4.2 cents. This is coal-fired and nuclear power from Wisconsin. On the weekends, they can buy that power for 2.9 cents. But there's a heck of a premium attached to that by the time it gets to the consumer. They mark up the power supply charge and the distribution charge. So we pay 25 cents. Now, so if you look at distributed generation, if Launce Warden was able to have a power purchase agreement with a customer base in and around Launce and Berrega, they can produce biomass power can be produced for 8 cents, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
And then we address the transmission and distribution end of that thing because we are not moving that power outside of the local area. And that's the paradigm shift that has
to happen. Right. So what you're saying is the big
cost
in the power is not so much in the production of the power but in the movement of the power.
Absolutely.
Like, I think, equal at least usually. And that's another factor to consider is that the high price of electricity that we have in our area kind of plays into the emergence of renewables because in other places where the price per kilowatt hour is so much less, it becomes not cost effective to start to think about them.
So
they don't pencil out.
Yeah, and when I think of renewable power here in the Western Upper Peninsula, I think that's the first thing to come to mind. I remember covering the press conference when they reopened Launce Warden.
Mm-hmm.
I've told this story before. There was an official from the state who came up, and I think it was maybe her first trip to the Upper Peninsula, because I introduced myself. I welcomed her to the area, and I said, "What did you think of your trip up here?" And she gushed, "Oh, there's so much woody biomass here." And I said, "Well, ma'am, we call those trees."
Wow.
That's the first thing I think of. But the second thing I think of is there was a lot of electrical production based on water up here. We have dams that are still in place that are still costing a lot of money for UPCO, because UPCO is still responsible for at least some of those dams, but there's no more electricity being produced there. Is that something?
Yeah, from what I understand, that's what they're using for their renewable portfolio standard, that these dams are providing their renewables, and that's it. They don't need any more. They're under no pressure. So how could they not be producing electricity?
But there used to be, Launce used to have
dams that I don't know about. Okay.
Yeah, there used to, obviously, UPCO still has some big dams, and some of them being used and some of them not so much being used. But there were a lot of other small power plants in the mix here. Launce had a power plant on the Falls River. Is that something we should look at?
I would consider the state of the art at the turn of the century better than what we have today. You look at Calumet, there are 37 existing shafts up there into the conglomerate load. They're now full of water. But they had a steam-based district heating system at the turn of the century because all the equipment on the mine sites was operated with steam, and there was surplus. So they ran big pipes under the city streets, and they had a wonderful district heating system back then. That's what we can do today, because what now is in there is 60-degree water year-round. Forget about it, whether it's 30 below outside ambient air temperature. We can pull that water up, particularly in Calumet, out of any one of those 37 shafts, and we could heat and cool the entire village of Calumet with mineshaft geothermal water.
I know that that's been proposed. That seems to me it was a year or two. I heard something about perhaps at least the Calumet School District being able to tap into that. The Calumet School Complex, very close to those mine shafts and the old property there, that they were going to try some type of geothermal experiment to see if they could grab some power out of it and some cooling use out of it in the summer.
There are some very forward-thinking people at CLK who went the first logical step. Out of the big power users up here, Portage Hospital is one, Michigan Tech main campus is the other, but Calumet Schools has a big footprint facility, 250,000 square feet or better. They moved to a wood pellet heating system, which is very cost effective. We'd like to see them go the next step, and we've actually proposed to township and village people a high profile project that demonstrates the concept would be done at the Coliseum up there. It's a historic building. We can make ice for them with mineshaft geothermal, and we can heat and cool that building so that when you're watching a game on January 19th, you're not highly uncomfortable. Those are things that could be done today.
The other thing that could be done relatively quickly, I think, and we were talking about this before we started recording the program, is the institution of some wind-based power. It does get windy from time to time in the Copper Country. We pretty much know that. Is there a way that we can realistically harness that wind power to use to assist with our electricity?
We are honored to have the guru of big wind in Michigan, Rich Vanderveen, who pioneered and implemented the Gratiot County Wind Project, has moved to Marquette. He is interested in creating a 20-year energy efficiency and security strategy for the UP. If you look at Gratiot County, 44,000 residents, they have 212 megawatts of capacity, 133 turbines. We don't want to take our beautiful area and turn it into a wind farm.
Yeah, that's going to be my first question, because I've been through that wind farm a number of times down there. You've got these towers all over the place, little lights on top that blink simultaneously all night long. I can see a huge backlash from people who live along the shoreline of the Keweenaw Peninsula saying, we don't want 150 of those puppies sitting along in our beautiful woods.
And we don't need them. It would be pretty ridiculous to scale it at that scale up here.
We'd love to say that there are about 2,400 permanent residents in Keweenaw County. Call 1,000 people equals a megawatt. That's about mm-hmm. what you need to service them.
2 megs, so Keweenaw County.
Let's start off with 3 GE 1.6 megawatt turbines. How about that? We'll get 3 landowners to agree to that. I think the aesthetic impact will be small, but one heck of a demonstration project that we could take Keweenaw County and its permanent residents off the grid.
Yeah, so we put these up, but they only work when the wind blows.
Well, exactly, and that's Sam's idea, and I think that it would be really great to have a mix of renewables using, because both wind and solar are intermittent, but woody biomass is the only thing that you can generate steady steam, full power, constant, 24/7. So use all the wind you need, use all the solar you can use, but then back it up at night and back it up when it's not windy and back it up when it's cloudy. Provide jobs, clean out the forest, not clean out the forest. That sounds really bad.
That sounds really bad.
Can we just like erase that? But no, just keep the fire charge down, because when the charge is getting so high in the forest, that kind of brings up the risk of wildfires.
Yeah, 100 years ago, we cleaned out the forest. We really don't want to do that again. But I know that's not what you meant there. Melissa Davis and Sam Lockwood are my guests from the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition. The challenge is all of these ideas are out here. We could use some wind. We could use some solar. Solar is much more effective here than a lot of people would guess, particularly in our long summer days. We've got woody biomass growing disguised as trees all around us here. This is going to take a phenomenal amount of money to put these plants together and these new grids and circuits together. and to try to build all of this thing. Where does this money come from? And if we're going to pay this huge amount of money to do this, how does it lower our electrical bills?
Let's put it in perspective. The Bay Lake Project, the American Transmission Company, who is our transmission partner, they want to build at a cost of between $447 million, perhaps as high as $800 million, bigger transmission lines from Wisconsin to continue to enrich people in Wisconsin and create jobs down there. So call it $500 million as a nice average. I'll give you four examples of what we can build here in terms of generation. We can do 8 megawatts of solar in Lake Linden on a 200-acre brownfield site, the old Sands, at a cost of less than $20 million. That will supply energy to everybody north of the lift bridge. The Launce Worden biomass plant is 14 megawatts, and the cost of that, which is currently operating, is, Melissa, about how much?
The cost of the Launce Worden plant for them to build it in the first place? That I'm sorry, I don't have. I'm not enough an expert on it to tell you.
But it's in tens of millions versus hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's the point.
The three wind turbines we mentioned for Keweenaw County, we're probably looking at $9 million. And geothermal, because of the nature of it, and the reservoirs are under every one of the UP's communities by definition, because that's how the mine sites evolved. Those can be rolled out for under $10 million. So I think a distributed generation project using district heating system in Calumet can be done for under $10 million very easily.
So what do you expect from the state? You have called on the governor to support this and for the state government to get behind this. What do you expect them to do to help get a project like this underway?
Well, we'd like them to help us draft and adopt a comprehensive energy strategy so that we can respond to the situation using our own indigenous resources, and we want them to support our ability to do that.
We have a fighting chance
against the upcoming pressures.
There's such a disparity between the prices that are paid for electricity in Lower Michigan. Consumers Energy and DTE service 9 million people. There's 309,000 people in change in the 15 counties of the UP. We view being the second highest electric prices currently as an incredible negative for economic development, and we're facing a potential doubling. Closure of PIPP, the build-out of those very expensive transmission lines. If they decide that they're going to resurrect PIPP as a natural gas plant, $142 million just to get it EPA compliant, then the change over to natural gas. The natural gas has to come from somewhere for that volume, and the proposal is to bring it from Canada. At a UPEDA meeting this summer, we heard the $1 billion cost.
There ain't that many of us.
Right.
We'll be an economic desert, said one of our county commissioners, if we go from 25 cents to 50 cents currently.
A lot of business would leave the area.
Yeah.
So how can people find out more about this project that you're underway with the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition? Are you at this point looking for members of this organization? Where do you exist right now?
We have our founding members that represent wind, solar, biomass,
geothermal,
and other, which includes hydroelectric.
Right. And crowd financing and, you know, policy changing.
The one thing that I think we are definitely missing is the capital community. There are PACE situations in Michigan. There are other ways to get these kind of projects financed. That's a key piece that's missing, mm-hmm. And that's not just for renewable energy. That's across the board. Angel investors, small funds, the hedge funds, other funds that can capitalize these projects.
And so you get somebody who's going to pay for a biofuel plant here or a hydro plant there. Who comes in with the money to upgrade the grid so that these can all be attached in and can operate efficiently?
I would like to see us sit down face-to-face, which we have done with UPCO and REA, with American Transmission, and UPCO is responsible for distribution to the customer itself.
Right, so they'd still distribute, if you know.
If you're producing
So you're not looking at setting up five or six different little electrical power companies that would each have their own little group of customers. It would be more logical to build these and then route everything through UPCO, which is an existing bureaucracy.
We'd love to see that happen. But so far, it's been kind of a standoff. And so it forces you towards that island model or the microgrid model. But it doesn't have to be that way.
All right. And I've got to wrap things up here. I'm afraid we're
there's always so much more.
Well, yeah, there always seems there to really be is. When I do these conversations. It's fascinating stuff, and I'm sure that this is not – I hope that this is not the last that we will hear about it. But thanks so much to Melissa Davis and Sam Lockwood from the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition for joining me on the second half of Copper Country Today.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.